Invitation. It's very nice to be here, not for CETA-PI Day, and to be able to talk to people. So, what I want to show you is something that I did more than 2.5 years ago, and I could not publish it because the model that it was based on was not published. It was only presented by Penrose in different talks. And then, so the work was just lying around and, until he put out his paper, and I looked at that and I said, okay, I've done this before. So I don't want to defend or rule out the model at all. It's just the paper that has to do with the observable effects. I want to show you how you can do the statistics. Okay, so for those of you who are not familiar with the CMB statistic, because this has this is based on CMB statistic, and it's important to know how CMBs work with the sky maps. A CMB sky looks like this. It's a full sky. It's projected onto this oval shape. And it's available online. This is the WMAP data that anyone can download, and can download Hilpix as well. And now Hilpix is also available in Python. So in less than 3 minutes, you can have access to the data and the analysis software to repeat all the analysis for yourself. So the data, the CMB sky, is a Gaussian random field on a sphere. Okay? Now, as physicists, when we have something that we want to work with and we don't know what to do exactly with that, first thing that we do is that we expand it in terms of some basis, right? The natural way of doing it here is to expand it in terms of the spherical harmonics, because these are the natural orthonormal bases on the sphere, right? And this is how we do it. We take the data, multiply it by the spherical harmonics, and then integrate over all angles, right? And that gives us the ALM coefficient. Yeah. We have two indices. And then we square the ALM, we square the coefficients, and then sum them over L, because we are assuming that everything in L is isotropic. And what we get is the famous power spectrum of the CMB. Okay. So if you want to look at it this way, that we take the map, take it to the Fourier space, and then we square it, that gives us the power spectrum. In getting the power spectrum, we don't do any assumption. There's no assumption in getting that. So the data points here are derived from WMAP 7 observations. And you see that we can clearly see the trend of the power spectrum. We have acoustic peaks, and then there is a damping tail. So now all these CMB experiments are trying to measure that. WMAP has done an excellent job up to ETA 400. Everyone else is doing the tail. And without making any assumption, and that's important here because we'll come back to this point. Without making any assumption, you get, if you just download this data, get the power spectrum, you see this clear power spectrum of the CMB with the peaks. And when we expand it in terms of spherical harmonics, this is what we do. We break the map into components of different harmonic else. When you add them all, you get the original map. And then when we get the data points, we fit our favorite model to that. And here, this is the best fit of the longer CDM power spectrum to the data. And you see that it's perfectly consistent. This is the best, this is the most amazing consistency between theory and observations after the black body was observed. And so this power spectrum, as I said, is model independent. Even if you had done this before Jim Peebles was born, you would have gotten the same power spectrum without making any assumptions about the universe. Okay?
But there was no lambda before. I guess there was Jim Peebles, but there was lambda.
No, I mean the measurement. The measured power spectrum has been like this for the last few thousand years. And this power spectrum has all the information about the physics of the universe, right? And with a handful of parameters, you can generate this power spectrum using CAM, and then you can make simulations of the sky, which has the same physics in it. Okay, which means that it has the same power spectrum, but just different realizations, like different initial values. And if you do that, you get maps which have the same physics, the same power spectrum, but they look different. Now, our universe is, and these are called realizations of the sky. Our universe is just one realization of the sky, okay, like that. So like throwing the dice and looking at one of the numbers that you get. And if you want to do anything on the CMB, if you observe anything in the CMB sky, you have to say that, okay, this is just one throw of the dice, so I should do many of them, I should do many simulations, and then compare what I am observing with what I get from like 1 million copies of the universe. Like, you should always compare with the ensemble average. And should always be aware of the posterior
statistics. Because I missed the beginning.
Yes.
What is the difference between one versus the other?
It is, so...
What do you change?
Just the initial condition. Just the random number, the seed for the random number generator. So if you take a map, you can break it into spherical harmonic coefficients, right? If you add these up, you get, say, the original map. Okay, and different realization of the sky means like different rotation of these hot and cold spots with different, slightly different amplitudes. But the overall power spectrum remains the same within the errors. Yes.
This is like really good to do this red kind of spots mean anything or?
This is like the modes in a string, right? If you have, so L equals zero is just constant, right? L equals one is one up, one down, right? L equals two has two peaks and two troughs. So these are the two peaks.
So in a different universe, the two spots would be somewhere else.
Right, yeah, they rotate. And,
by that you mean as far as angular momentum is concerned, the m value, right? m plus 1 minus l to plus l,
right?
Changing those.
Yes. Okay. Right. So right. So this is with all the m's for a given l.
When you say you get different realizations, do you mean that you treat each alm as an independent random variable? And
yes. But you keep the variance fixed.
The average value is fixed by
exactly.
From that graph.
Exactly. Right. So because if you look at that, the CL, the power spectrum is just the variance of the coefficient, the ALM, right? So when you make a realization, it means that you keep the variance fixed, and then you choose the ALM in a random way that come from the Gaussian distribution. Such that it gives you the same power spectrum and diagram. Okay. And so each of these maps, the simulation, will have a power spectrum that is fluctuating around my average power spectrum, the theory power spectrum, right? And if you do 1 million, not even 1 million, if you do 100 of these realizations, take the power spectrum, add them, you clearly see the true power spectrum. And then, because this is a random realization, this is just one random realization of the sky, you should be very careful about the posterior statistic. This is a big trap, and many people have fallen into that. And if you look at the data and you say that, well, I see something here, right? And for example, this famous SH written on the data, and then design your statistic to look for what you have seen in the data. This is called a posterior statistic. Then you get something that is very unlikely to get, and you say that my universe is weird, and you write paper, and your referee, the referee rejects it, and then so. But you get a lot of coverage.
Sure, but that referee doesn't always reject it,
right? Not necessarily. But I think now, I mean, if you do it now, it's the most probably. The data that we have, the best data that we have right now until Planck releases this data in 2013 comes from WMAP observation. WMAP has observed the sky in five different frequencies from 19 gigahertz to from 23 gigahertz to 97 gigahertz, which is the WMAP, the WBAP. The difference in these observations is the foreground, because the CMB has a uniform intensity over all these bands. What changes is how strong is, for example, our galaxy emitting in these different frequencies. So the cleanest is the W band at 94 gigahertz, and it has the smallest beam. So that is why people always use that, and the next best thing is the V band at 61 gigahertz. And we will be using these maps as well. And you can combine these maps to remove the foregrounds and get the ILC, the internal linear combination map. But it's better not to use this map for science, because the errors are not really well known. So, now, I want to say briefly what the CCC model is, without getting into details, and there is going to be a talk on April 6th that you will hear about this in great details. So the idea here is that we want a model that has no beginning of time, right? So we want the universe to be cyclic. And the way that Penrose is suggesting to do that is to say that, well, what do I need in the universe? I want a universe that is flat and isotropic and is filled with radiation in the early times. So the way that we are getting that is saying that there is a hot beginning of time, which is the Big Bang, and then there is the inflation, that it smooths everything up, right? And it makes everything flat. And I know some people don't like inflation, but this is how the inflationary model works, right? So Penrose says that, okay, take the inflationary part, put it in the previous cycle, okay? And that means that we have our universe, and it is expanding, and the expansion is being accelerated. And so that means that we are in a semi-inflationary mode now, right? Now, if we wait long enough in a very distant future, what happens is that the universe keeps expanding and expanding more and more, and it does what inflation is supposed to do for you. So it stretches everything. And then the structures form more and more. So you get heavy structures forming. And then the universe becomes colder and colder as you go to the later time. And so many things happen here. For example, if the universe gets really, really cold, your black holes can evaporate through Hawking radiation or things like that. And then the very super heavy black holes merge and they emit gravitational radiation. So we will reach a universe that has a lot of compact objects which are merging and emitting gravitational radiation, and anything else that is left in the universe is in terms of radiation, right? And then, so what happens here, and that is the geometrical part, is that, so he proposes to have a conformal theory where your Weyl tensor vanishes at one point, okay? And then the conformal coefficient becomes inverse after that point. So you have a universe that is expanding, and then it goes through a transition, and then you start your new universe. So this is your universe, it's expanding, and then this is the transition point, which is the new Big Bang here. Anything big becomes small, and anything hot, cold becomes hot. And then,
so at which point does that thing, new Big Bang, happen? Is there some random point?
It's in the far distant future of, and these universes are called Aeon, A-E-O-N, and in the distant future, this transition happens, okay? And what is important here is that he says that anything that you have in terms of gravitational radiation becomes scalar field in the next Aeon. That means that the gravitational radiation here becomes matter and radiation in the next universe. Okay? And
So how exactly does this, so you have the singularity, which is where the prior curvature comes out, where it's close to zero.
Right.
And is this a topology? Is what is happening
transition.
Is it, so you have some kind of a topology that a new universe that is emerging? I mean, I'm not sure I understand the causal diagram of something. Why is that new universe causally disconnected from the previous one?
I'm not sure. You can ask him. And
so I heard him give a talk about this.
Okay.
I think that the statement is the original motivation was precisely that if you take a traditional FRW conformal diagram, you know, it doesn't have a space like that in the future, and so it seems possible to match it on to the path of some of the conformal diagram for some future epoch. But if you have, if the universe is really becoming cosmological constant dominated right now, then its future space like that, you know, its future it will have it will have a space like future boundary, and. So not let that come, and so you just glue it onto the Big Bang of a subsequent phase. But to do that, you have to imagine that the theory somehow that even though it's not manifest today, that somehow the far future will become manifest, that actually the theory is conformally invariant, so you can do an infinite rescaling of the conformal geometry of the conformal factor of the geometry. No physical effect, and the non-conformal part of the geometry, everything else just goes smooth through that transition. I thought it was the idea, or at least circa a few years ago.
So there's a quote, the future is therefore completely causally determined by what goes on in the previous
year. Yes. And that is, so that is the key point that they are deriving the observer. And if you...
Next week, is it Tuesday? Anyway, there will be a talk where an exact solution of that type is going to be presented. It's part of my work and my focus here. So in the beginning, I thought that. I don't know anything about Penrose. I must say that. I'm not an expert on that. We came to this solution quite independently, and we have a knowledge of what goes on. So anyway, I just want to say that there is an exact solution which would look like that.
So what exactly is meant by a transition, like our universe disappears and reappears? It's a continuity.
Is that the conformal version from what I can tell of Obama's cosmology? Where there you can think of everything collapsing at some, you know, at some physical point to which the curvature then blows up, and then or it does something funny. But here you're just putting in a conformal transformation that smooths it out. all it is giving you is a conformal boundary, and you're allowing yourself to go from one to another across that conformal boundary. That's it.
I mean, at least in our case, the entire universe collapses to zero. The whole collapses to zero, and then smoothly expands it.
What makes it collapse?
Or just the interaction, the dynamics of the field. There is a scalar field interacting with gravity and the dynamics of that.
But is there a dynamics for that? Or
yes.
This is just like design,
dynamics.
Right?
No. Oh, dynamics.
Okay. But, I mean, these are different
equations. The conformal coefficient in front of your
yes.
metric, it just becomes inverse. Okay, so anything.
Is it like at some point one starts measuring distances with a different unit? Or something?
Yeah. Right. And that's what it.
I don't know about him.
Okay.
I,
yeah.
I don't really know about. In our case, it just goes to zero and then expands again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, so, okay. This was the analytic part of the model, and from here onward, there are only words, okay? And there are no quantities that you can measure. There is no derivation or calculation that you can follow. So you should just listen to.
Other derivations you cannot follow.
No, there is no derivation at all.
Okay.
And it's just so they say that, well, I have these black holes which are merging, right? And they emit gravitational radiation. And gravitational radiation are like these ripples in this space time, right? And then you go through that new Big Bang, and all this gravitational radiation, which now looks like an onion, like concentric spheres, it becomes ripples in the next universe in the form of high intensity radiation and high matter density, right? So you have these onions in the next universe, which are hot, right? And then we have our universe, we have our surface of lattice scatter, which is a sphere. And where they intersect, when you cut the onion, what do you see? You see circles, right? You see concentric circles which are uniform, which have a uniform hot temperature. Yeah, and they are on our surface of lattice scatter. So just like the ripples on a pond, the CMB sky is a superposition of all these circles. And I should also say that nothing changed from 2 years ago. So there's this misunderstanding that they changed their prediction from uniform temperature to low variance circles, but these are the same things. Nothing changed. I just found this in their new paper. So
what is the speciality about these circles, that they have
the
equal intensity?
Yes, so look at a random realization of the sky. Right, you have random hot and cold points, data points along the circle, right? But here you have these circles which are uniformly hot, right? Yes, and then from the superposition of them, you get these features in this way, right? Okay.
Is the idea is that there are a lot of these circles, so all of them add up to some Gaussian random field, except for some of them that are much stronger?
No, because the radiation is coming from the radiation that you had in your previous universe, right?
Okay.
But you have the circles that now are, so it depends on how many mergers you had in your previous universe and where you fall in.
But you probably had millions and millions of mergers.
Right.
Right.
So you expect to have many of these circles.
Yeah.
Right.
But some of them are going to be stronger than others. Some
yes.
Are going to be.
Right. Because some of them are coming from more massive black holes than the others. Okay, so this was the original idea. Then I took his model and they gave a talk at Princeton. And at that time, I was in Paris. And David Spiegel was in his talk. And then he came to Paris and told me that this is something that can be tested very easily. And so I took WMR data, I devised this statistic, designed this statistic that I took for every given pixel here, right? You find circles around the pixel, right? And then you average the temperature. Very simple statistic, unbiased and easy. You just average temperature along the surface in the sky for different centers, right? And for every given radius, you look at the distribution function of your averages. What do you expect to see? Where if you have circles which are uniformly hot, then fluctuations along the circles don't average to zero, right? Remember that we are averaging the CMB mean map to be zero, right? So if you do this along the circles in a Gaussian random field that is normal, you expect to get Gaussian, which is peaked at zero, and it doesn't have huge outliers. Okay? But if you have circles like that, you get 5-6 sigma detection of circles which are really hot, right?
But you really have to choose the right circle.
You do it for all possible
everywhere.
Circles.
You do it everywhere.
So fortunately, the sky is pixelized and it has finite pixelization. It has 3 million pixels here, so you have so many circles. But you don't have to do the calculation. You just put it on the computer and it just does it for you, right? But it's a huge calculation because you have so many circles. And
only if you center your circle at the right place, if there is such a circle, really.
Yes.
Only if you, on, that, only
then you, do then you see it.
Okay.
Exactly. We are looking for those circles.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, for each pixel, you look at different radii.
Yes. Okay. Right. So what you get is, like, for different radii, you get a Gaussian distribution of, I mean, you get a distribution of these circles. And I did it for two sets of maps, which are W band and V band. And I added the right noise to them. I smoothed the map with the same beam that WMAP has. And then I did it 1,000 times. So all the circles, I did 1,000 simulations, and I repeated that 1,000 times on the simulation as well. Right? So that gives me the average distribution with the error bars around it. It's the great thing here you don't see. And what I'm looking for are huge spikes here around 6 sigma, 5, 6 sigma here. Right. And I found them. Okay, so I found circles which are really weird. And then I went back to the map and see, and I checked where the circles were coming from. And it turned out that, well, when we have the sky, we have to cut the galaxy out of our map, because the galaxy is really bright here, and it gives us, so it biases our measurement, because what you see here is not primordial. So we cut the galaxy, and everything else has been subtracted from the map. We cut the galaxy and all the point sources that we have in the map, and then we did that. And then when I looked where they were coming up, where the circles were coming from with the huge temperature, it seemed that all of them are coming from right at the edges of the masked map, where you have very few numbers here and most probably hot points because they are right close to the galaxy. So you have high intensity coming from the galaxy, and they are suffering from the low number statistic. Right. Then I excluded all the pixels, all the circles with few pixels in them, and then I changed that and did it again so many times, and I realized that they all go away, and you're left with another detection. Okay, so I found this huge circles in the sky which had very large averages that are along that. And then I went back, looked at the data, and you can see that if you smooth the sky with a huge beam, such that you don't, your eyes are not fooled by small scale fluctuation, and you see that they are coming from here. Okay? So there is this structure here in WMAP data, there is that structure here, and when your circles happen to fall here, you get large averages. Too bad, right? And by the way, these are the fingers of whoever that have been discussed. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And if you want to do wrong statistics, just take them and say, "Wow, I'm seeing fingers here," and then cross correlate it with the X-ray.
Sorry, now you say it's too bad. Why again? Can you explain why you say it's too bad? That
because this is not a circle. It's a so. You had this hot region here, you had that hot region here, right? And then a circle that goes through that is just picking up all the hot points, right? And you have more of that, actually. I'm not showing it here. So another circle that goes, anything that goes through that, again, gives you a high average, a high mean.
But by the time in a sigma, it shouldn't be.
But I mean, that sounds like a posteriori throwing down.
No, this is like it's not. So nothing was above 4 sigma, and this is like, and the 4 sigma was for guys coming from the edges with very few pixels in them. These are this is 2.5 years ago, so I don't remember the exact numbers, but the most significant things were these guys.
But the question is, do you see more of these in your simulations, or do you see the exact same number in the simulations? Because presumably the simulators have the same features.
Yes, but you should remember that these are, No, these are like a few sigma, a few sigma away.
But I mean that, so that's the thing. So how many of them?
But right. But the problem is that if you want to do that, you have to do it on the ILC map, which is the bad map to you, because that's the only full sky map that we have, right? Mm-hmm. And then these are huge radii. These are 59-degree radii. But I don't remember the exact number.
When you say few sigma, you mean in 5% or 1% of simulations you saw a circle.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
All right. That's okay. Yeah. It's still not clear. Like, why is that bad? I mean, why can't that circle be a signature of the CCC?
Well, first of all, it's not a circle. So you see that you look at that. It's not a circle. It's a large scale structure that is elongated in this direction. This is another mode which is in that direction, and then you add up two things, you get something that is warm.
I mean, could this circle plus random other stuff? So it doesn't have to look
right. Right, but this is fast, right? You expect, I mean. The circles, this is what you expect to get from a circle, right? And this, so you see that you have this families of circles here, and that's just because you have this fat structure here, which is much fatter than what you get. So look, what you expect to get, right? You have this shell that you're cutting, right? And then you smooth it with the beam, right? So what you get is something of the order of 0.1 degree, right? And that's how fat it is, almost. And but you look at that, this is like a few degrees wide. It's a large scale mode in the map. It's not a localized feature in the map.
How How is it that it has been picked up in the previous, previously the tiny circles you showed up with the...
No, the you get, so you get small circles and big circles, and I'm showing you the origins of each of them. Alright, so, yeah, then I sent these to Penrose, and then he suggested that maybe you could look for ellipses in the sky, and then ellipses are different because they have orientation as well, right? So you have more parameters and you need to have more runs. That took another few months to finish all the calculations, and there were no ellipses either. And then I gave up, right? Then after 2.5 years, they...
Sorry, if I can stop you. Can you go back to... So these lower ones, lower plots, so the black line is the actual sky and the red one is simulation, or are there different colors?
No, so so the black and red are one sigma from 1,000 simulations in the PDF. Okay? And these colors are, I mean, the blue ones are from W and from that.
So I don't understand, what's the difference between red and black here?
So you get a PDF from the average of 1,000 simulations,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And then because you have 1,000 PDFs, mm-hmm. at every sigma I did a one sigma on the PDF. So this is the error on the distribution that comes from,
okay.
from the...
From a thousand, so this is
yeah.
one sigma region.
Yeah, so these are like one sigma, if, yeah.
Okay, so you're saying that the blue lines are orbiting one sigma.
Right.
That's the point, I say.
Some points they go out of one sigma, but that's what we expect.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's very weird. Okay, then at the end of last year, there was this paper by Gurlali and Penrose where they did not look at the intensity, but now they looked at the variances of the circles. Because if you have something that has uniform temperature, then of course the variance that you get on those circles will be low, right? And so this is from their paper, and they say that, they just did the same thing. They fixed the pixels in the centers, and then they looked at the variances along the circles with different radii.
Actually, can I stop you? Is that clear that the variance has to be low? I mean, I could have a uniform temperature thing to which I add a Gaussian random field with the same variance as the rest of the map, and then the variance on that circle would be the same as the variance on every other circle. Or is there some constraint that enforces that, or?
So if you have... No, so if you look at the... look at it this way. If you have a hot circle, right, that is giving you the CMV, right? So your variations around the mean are small.
But then I have two handles. I'm going to have the average along the circle and the variance along the circle. So those seem to be two different handles. I guess that's my curiosity. What in the model, so from what we... Like where you're saying before, the model predicts a relatively
high intensity
temperature, but then I guess there's another aspect of the model which actually is, it seems that that's separate from saying that it's low variance. Those are two different handles, so I guess you're saying both.
Right. So I guess if you want to claim a detection, you should show that if you find low variance circles, you should also show that they are anomalously hot. Are really warm. And so if you satisfy one of them and not the other one, then this happens. So let me show you
I think to just maybe clarify the question, these two are not obviously related to each other. So they seem like independent predictions, like low variance and high temperature.
No, they are related.
But they might be related if there is some like constraint on there's some additional concern, but because the variance is a statement about difference in temperatures, and the mean is another statement, it's about the sum of temperatures.
By variance, do you mean that there are some circles in the sky all around which, if you take the variance of the temperature itself, it's
right.
Small around that?
Right.
So are you saying that the temperature could be small, but still the variance significant, or small?
Or vice versa.
Yeah. I mean, it could be low temperature, hard to notice because of the temperature, but the variance may be significant.
But if for example, there was a constant, there was a maximum temperature, for example, then the two would be related, that you increase the mean, then the variance would be lower. But I mean, if there is no constraint of that sort, then...
No, there is no constraint. The only reason that they look for low variance is that they say, suppose I look at the limiting, the limiting end, right? Where I don't have any Gaussian fluctuation, it's just a circle with a fixed temperature. So you get zero variance, and if that is your dominant source of fluctuation there, then you expect to get small variances.
Okay, so you're saying that the model actually says that in the places where you have a ring of high temperature, say you have, you also, that coincides with the ring of low rings.
And that,
so it's actually
that,
two
and
predictions.
That all of them works, right?
Okay, now I'm converted to the most plausible interpretation of what they are saying must be the thing Yanesh just said, which is that if you want the temperature of each pixel in the sky to be chosen from a Gaussian of the observed variance, you don't want to change that, but you want to have some circle that has anomalously high temperature across it, and it will have a different variance than the rest of the sky.
Right. That's right, because the variance, if you remember Parseval's theorem. The variance along the circle is given by the sum of the power spectrum, right, of the map locally. And we know the power spectrum of the map, we have observed it. So you don't want to mess with that. And you want to keep your power spectrum as we have observed, because there is no freedom in changing the power spectrum. It's fixed, it's observed, and we can change it. But you want to change the mean of your observed sky, right? Because the mean is something that you just throw away, right? And you have freedom in changing that. That's why the first thing that I designed, the first statistic, was was to look for the mean, and because that's also unbiased and clean to work with. But I'll show you that this. It depends on the noise, because the noise is in the power. So if you look at the power spectrum, they're picking stuff from the noise part of the noisy part of the map more. And so let me just show you what happens here. The paper here says that now they had WMAP 7 data, so they used the new data, which is basically the same as WMAP 5 on the scales that we are interested in. And then they looked at the variances, and this is the plot that they have in their paper. And they say that, okay, I see that this data point is low, that one is low, and this one is low too. So it seems that when I fix the center of a circle in the sky at this point, and I show you where it is, I get three circles which are concentric and they have low variances.
Did you understand why they ignored the high variance ones too?
Because the model does not predict that.
Okay.
But so it's not difficult to get high variance points, because if you have, so they are not masking the point sources. Okay. Now if your circle goes through a point source or a cluster of galaxies, you immediately get a large variance, okay, which is that's not weird. And that doesn't tell you anything. You have to make sure that you have masked all the point sources. And but if you get a low variance that is really low, then you can't you don't have any way of explaining that in the models that we know, right? That's why this is important. And what you, if you have worked with the data, you see that the big thing that is missing here is that this is a measurement without error bars. And if I look at that, I can't say if this is significant or not, because if the error bar is this, this big, then of course this is super significant. But if the error bar is this big, then all these data points are consistent with each other, right? And right after that, there were three papers saying that this can be done in a proper way, and if you do it properly, if you put error bars on these points, these are not significant. Right. So there was this paper in The Economist, first on December 2nd, and then there was Nature News December 10th saying that, no, that's actually not true. Well, let's look at the detection first to see what exactly is detected here. So they did it on W band, 94 gigahertz, and did it on 60 gigahertz. And you see that the troughs are the same here. And of course, you're looking at the same CMB sky, and the noise structure is pretty much similar. And so you have the same set of dips in the variances in two observations, because your sky is the same. And then they compare it with the simulation, and they say the Gaussian simulation, which is, I mean, to me it looks like one simulation, but they don't mention what exactly they mean by the Gaussian simulation. And what you can see here are the scales here, okay? So the simulation goes from 110 to about 115-ish, okay? And the actual data goes from something near 60 to a maximum of 105, okay? Which means that the simulation is not consistent with the observed values even at one single point. If you overclock these, if you overclock your simulation here, this is your prediction. This is what you expect, and this is what, this is what you expect, and this is what you're getting. So you're getting, if this is your simulation, everything is significantly low variance. And here are these three circles that are low variance circles. And yes.
These circles that you choose, so there's obviously a minimum size. So what are the number of pixels, the smallest number of pixels you have?
Oh, okay. So what they are doing is that they take the map and they go at steps of 0.5 degrees, and that means that your smallest circle will have something about tens of pixels.
In it. Just tens.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So you have large variances, and can you see this red circle here? Right. So this is how the WMAP scans the sky. Right. It spends more time at the ecliptic poles than anywhere else, and these are the number of observations that WMAP has done. Where you have more observations, you have less noise, and therefore less variance coming from the noisy part of the map, right? And this circle, the first set of circles happen to fall right where you have minimum noise in your map. And so I did the same thing. I redid their calculations. I got these data, red data points are my variances in the map. And you see the same structure here. This is low, this is low, this is low. And I did 1,000 simulations of the sky and added and then smoothed that with the beam, added the noise to that, and then I asked what is the average value that you would expect from a normal sky, normal Gaussian sky. And this is what it is. So the first point is not significant at all. The second point is around 1 sigma. Third point, the point is less than 2, 3 sigma. And then they have another family of pixels, of circles, which are here, again in a clean part of the sky. And they, so this is very interesting.
This is your question.
They are when you ignore the high values of variances. So the second family, suppose that you don't have these to guide your eye, okay? So you have these guys which are high variance, and then this is low, right? And then again, this is low, and then this is also low, right? But if you look at the averages, if these are actually perfectly normal, the guys sitting next to them are high, right? And if you look at the error bars, they are just fine. And the third family is just fine. And they are actually higher than what you expect from average Gaussian mass. Now,
so that's one that's asked by 2 sigma and it's too high. Is that, you know, why?
Here?
Yeah.
This must be a point or something that is not like a cluster or a point source. I didn't really look at that. It's easy to get high values. Now, how many do you expect to get? We have, and by the way, what I used a super high resolution WMAP maps. I made them by co-adding single year maps and then getting a 5 million pixel map to make sure that we're not missing anything. And then I did the same smoothing that these guys did. And then after masking, you're left with 2.5 million pixels, right? And then after smoothing with a 5.5 degree, you're left with 165,000 independent pixels. And then you're looking at a combination of these. So at 3 sigma, you get around 500 incidents. Below 3 sigma, you get 500 circles, which should be as significant as what you're seeing here. Okay, so that means that the 10 circles that they have found, there are about 400 more to be discovered. And there was another paper for these guys. Yeah, Moss et al. No, sorry, Erickson and Burs. They show that you can, same method, you can find triangles in the sky, low variance triangles in the sky, and just take your favorite shape, and you can find it in the sky. All right. Then, to make sure that we are not missing anything because of the non-Gaussianity of the distribution function of the measurement, I looked at the PDF of all the sigmas, and this is the measured value from WMAP, and this is the distribution function. So a real detection of a very significantly low variance circle would be something that is here. Right? So, last part. Why are the results different? What have we done differently? So we see the same signal. There are dips in the, there are structures on the variances of the in the map, but the statistical significance is what we don't agree on, and that's because the way I'm assessing the statistical significance is based on simulations, and for my simulation I use a correct power spectrum that is similar to what we actually observe in the universe. No modeling, it's just what you observe with WMAP, right? And they are using flat spectrum. Now, if you want to know what is different here, this is WMAP if you mask the galaxy. This is a realization of my simulation. one of my simulated maps. And look at the size of the hot and cold spots here. So you see that there are spots that are clumping, that you see structure in the map, right? Gurzadian and Penrose, in their second paper, that was a response to our papers, they mentioned that we are doing this wrong because we are our method is model dependent because we are using a power spectrum that has structure on it. And therefore, we are just doing a loop. We assume that we are using this power spectrum and this, we say nothing is wrong. And they say that in their simulation, we are using just a white noise power spectrum as their input power spectrum. That means that all the cheat cells in this map are uncorrelated. They are independent. So there is no structure here. You see there are no clumping here in this map. And that means that if this is our universe, we shouldn't have existed. It's just white noise, right? So they fail to take into account the fact that the universe is correlated on different scales. And that's the main difference here. And if you don't do that, then of course, you know, then your simulation does not agree with your measurement even at one single point. Okay? And then I take the realistic noise realizations based on WMAP observation and how many times WMAP is observing the patch of the sky, which is important here because it goes into your estimator. And they don't say what they do about the noise. And proper treatment of the beams. So I smooth my map with the real beams of WMAP. They don't say how they do it. And they don't say what they do with the foregrounds and how they mask it. So this is the power spectrum of, so the blue is the power spectrum of WMAP map, the red is the power spectrum of my simulation, and this is the noise. This is similar to what these guys are using for their input power spectrum, and therefore they get those simulations without any structure. Therefore, it may be that the CCC model is very well correct, and this may be the true model for our universe, but the regions in the sky that are claimed to be reasons for us to believe that the CCC model has an evidence in the real universe is not true. So I'll stop with a note that the whole thing happened on Facebook. When the paper was published, there was this post on Facebook, and then there are like 20 pages of this. I just chose the first one. And there are many comments. You can read it. It's really entertaining. And after that, the three papers came out. So the networking is important. Yeah, I'll stop here. Thank you.
This is from me. Everybody's reading these comments.
Yeah, so read this one.
So as it stands now, there's absolutely no evidence in favor of the CCC model.
These circles are not real evidences.
And the predicted circles were supposed to be...
They were supposed to be the clearest.
That's sort of quoting. It's not admissible in court. That's hearsay.
Why was it published in The Economist, by the way?
Sorry, what?
Why was that picture published in The Economist?
Similar analyses are been used to predict the housing market.
but isn't as opposed to
isn't the Economist British?
Oh, right.
Yeah,
there's a connection.
Yeah, I got after posting that, I got a lot of calls from British reporters. They wanted to know what's going on. It seems that there is a huge thing. Everyone was talking about that there. Because it came out with a huge press conference and with the book, with an entire book on this subject. And so it was very well covered. And if you search it, you find millions of blog posts that people are talking about this.
But there's also no prediction from a model of how many of these ones you see.
No, there is no number. It's just a qualitative prediction.
It's number greater than zero, that's all.
So there is no real theory, you're saying.
There is no number that we can go out and check. So when I did it 2.5 years ago, I was not sure what I was constraining, because you usually have a parameter in your model that you either detect it, you measure it, or you put constraint on, right? And or you put like upper limit on. There was nothing here to put a constraint on or to predict. So the usual thing is, you do something on WMAP, you don't find it, you write another paper saying that fine can do better, and you predict how much better, but you can't do it here because you don't have numbers.
The number probably depends on the number of black hole collisions previously.
But you're saying, like you said, there's no parameter.
There are no parameters.
But if the circles were real, I would think that would be a perfect way.
But
strong evidence.
But I think his point is that the circles are real, but it is consistent with the current model as well.
So yeah, so you can't really call them circles.
So they can't, they have nothing to do with the CCC model.
As you said, like, triangles are real too.
Yeah.
Yeah, or anything you want. SH is real.
SH.
I mean, the
SH.
SH. That is written on the map. I should, in the beginning. So. It's interesting, but we will need more predictions, and then we will have better data, and so the future will be interesting, more interesting. This is the usual sentence.